You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to episode 281 of Locked On Raptors for Thursday, February 21st. I'm your host, Sean Woodley, LockedOnRaptors.com. Twitter at Woodley Sean, also at Locked On Raptors. You can find links to every single episode. Check out the Locked On Podcast Network on iTunes, all that good stuff. I'm sorry I'm rushing the intro here, but it was a very long podcast. I gotta go watch Team Canada crush Team USA in the women's gold medal hockey game, and I gotta get this thing posted. So today's podcast is with Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs. It was a very good chat. We chatted for about 50 minutes or so, just kind of about the Raptors and the Cavs and where they sort of stack up and matchup stuff and things like that. It was a really good time. Always like these ones with Chris. They're kind of a regular occurrence where we look at the Cavs and Raptors, talk about the two best teams in the East, because why not? We have to do lots of content on the network, and this seems like a perfect way to fill a day. And Chris is great to talk to, and we got to some interesting stuff with the trades that the Cavs made, the Raptors, whether or not they're different or not, and the perception of them, and whether or not they'd be good in the playoffs, all that good stuff. So enjoy the conversation with Chris. Sorry for the rushed intro, but you know what I was going to say anyway. Rate, review the podcast on iTunes. Takes no time. It's very easy. I appreciate it. It makes us more popular, more visible, easy to download, all that good stuff. So please do that. And enjoy the conversation with Chris Manning. I'll be back again tomorrow with another episode with Sahal Abdi or someone like that. I don't know. I haven't asked Sahal yet, but I'm sure he'll be on. I'm trying to find a guest, and Sahal is usually my go-to. So maybe you'll hear Sahal on the podcast tomorrow. If not, it'll be someone else. And until then, enjoy the evening. Enjoy Canada beating the U.S. in women's hockey and all that good stuff. And we will talk to you soon on Locked On Raptors. Enjoy the conversation with Chris. Hey, it's Sean Woodley from Locked On Raptors.
And it's Chris Manning from Locked On Cavaliers.
What's going on, Chris? It's the All-Star break. There's not a whole lot actually going on. This might be a more personal question for you. How are you? How is life with no Isaiah Thomas on your team and not having to worry about that? What's going on, buddy?
You know, it's All-Star break came at a great time. It was very relaxing to get some time, and I think everyone out there is that little break comes at a good time when you think about how soon the playoffs really are. But the Cavs, it's very almost invigorating covering a team that shed everything. Having been in the locker room and at the practices where Isaiah has had some really weird moments, I am very kind of intrigued to be around this new team. I have not had the chance to go to practice or anything yet, but I'm very curious to see what the mood's going to be like. But just watching them on TV, as I'm sure listeners of both of our podcasts know, the Celtics game, the Thunder game, and just LeBron's kind of vibe right now, it seems like it's a different mood. And that's kind of an exciting considering, and I don't know if you'd agree with this Cavs season felt it was very much headed in one direction, and it feels like we're at least looking at something potentially different now post-trade.
Yeah, I can't say I'm pleased with the developments. I was pretty excited about the Cavs being in utter disarray. I was really banking on them not being able to find a trade. But of course, they always pull trades out of their ass because that's what they do. And it's really, really annoying that they seem to make trades so easy when really it's a hard thing to do in the NBA. And then like all these teams like the Kings and the Jazz are just like, all right, here, have players. Have these good players to help you be better. Why not? Let's just help out LeBron at every turn. So as a Raptors fan, it's cool to see LeBron have a good team around him. And like once he inevitably makes it to the finals, that'll be at least a little bit more compelling, I suppose. But it's not cool if you were a Raptors fan really sort of looking at the Cavs, which I was, and thinking this was different than years in the past when you'd say, like, oh, the Cavs are vulnerable. Yeah, they can beat the Cavs in the playoffs. Like, that was never really a thing that was, like, you said that, but you wouldn't really believe it the last couple of seasons. Like, this year, I think you kind of could actually believe it because there were real flaws that you could kind of look at and be like, yeah, this team, like, there's no way this team is going to be able to play defense in any situation because they just don't have any good defensive players. And Isaiah Thomas is such a black hole on that end that you can really sort of attack that. And, you know, without Kyrie Irving, there's one less like, crazy shot maker. I mean, the Raptors have been burned in the past by Kyrie just having fourth quarters from hell. Fourth quarters from hell from a Raptors perspective. They're very good for the Cavs. This feels like a year where it's less of a pipe dream. It's maybe like a 50% proposition as opposed to like a 5% proposition. And that has kind of gone away a little bit, I think. I still think people are more confident this season than they were last year. And like, I don't think this Cavs team with the new additions is as good as they were last year, because last year's team was just so incredible. But I don't know, where are you at with that? Like, are you thinking differently about a potential matchup with the Raptors? I mean, we have this conversation. This is like a, I don't know, a bi-monthly podcast that we do. We just kind of check in on the Raptors-Cavs matchup kind of thing. But, like, I don't know. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on sort of how it's evolved since they made the trades and, like, how your opinion of what a matchup between these two teams could look like is.
Well, I think there's two sides to this. Number one, I think if you look at what the Cavs did, I think that as much as those first two games were very encouraging in beating those two teams in the way they did, I think they both had very impressive notes. I think it's worth noting that it's still too early for us to say exactly how this works. If you just look at Jordan Clarkson, his shooting numbers right now are just way higher than they're actually going to be when things level out. He may get that LeBron bump, but he's not going to shoot this well going forward. Rodney Hood is a guy that listeners of Locked and Casual and David Locke has pointed that he's a very streaky shooter, so he's not going to be 4 of 8 every night. Mm-hmm. How does George Hill level out, and how did this stuff sort of even out? And Kevin Love has to come back too, and that's sort of a big question mark. But I think on the other side of it, if you look at Toronto, and you know this, but you're certainly better than me, this Toronto team is playing differently. Mm-hmm. Like this isn't the same exact Toronto team that the Cavs have faced now. Yes, I think there's still a lot of going to be pressure on Kyle and on DeMar to prove themselves in the playoffs against LeBron, and I think LeBron will have that edge, and people will trust that, you know, he's going to perform and his team's going to perform. But I think this is I think stylistically this Raptors team could present some problems for the Cavs. I think Kevin Love and how he looks coming back would be a huge impact on this, because the George Hill quote that I know people have seen where he said we all have to be Robins to LeBron's Batman, to paraphrase him. I think if you look at what made the Cavs able to come back from 3-1, able to come back from and really run the East the last couple of years, and, you know, come back in different situations and be as good as they were despite their flaws, Kyrie was he wasn't another Batman, but he was like a Nightwing. He was able to freelance. He was able to branch outside of LeBron and do his own thing while still fitting in with LeBron. He was able to exist in both those worlds. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this team has that. I don't know if this team has that guy that can just go get a bunch of buckets, can go do that. And I think how they adapt to playing a different way with LeBron, they're still going to probably be very good, but I don't think we know yet how that all sorts out. And I think if you're Toronto, with how DeMar's playing, how Kyle's playing, and some of the other positions they have, I think they should feel more confident than they have in years past. I think there are questions to answer. I don't think Toronto has a good answer for Kevin Love, and I think, you know, you could debate the merits and how severe of a problem that is, but I think there's no questions. But I think for Toronto, I think in Boston too, I think both those teams should feel more confident. Even though these trades make the Cavs better, they still should feel more confident about the vulnerability of this Cavs team than I would have last year when they had Kyrie and all the same guys that helped them win the title.
Yeah, it's become sort of the eternal struggle of Raptors fans this season, is like trying to convince people that, like, hey, it actually is different this time. Where, like, maybe last season or the year before, after the original playoff disappointments against mostly against Washington, I don't think Brooklyn you could consider as a disappointment really, because they weren't even supposed to be there. But that Washington series, I think, really sort of clouded everything. And then, of course, not playing very well against the Pacers and Heat on their run to the conference finals also kind of played into that as well. And it just feels like people are waiting until the last possible second to buy in that this Raptors team is actually different, even though all of the numbers suggest it's entirely different. I mean, they're playing, their defense is, I think, kind of the thing people sleep on the most. It's like a top 3 or 4 defense, depending on the day you look at the net rating rankings. And when you sort of factor in just like all the different ways in which the offense has changed, they're shooting a ton more threes than they used to. They used to be near the bottom of the league in volume. They're near the top of the league in volume now. Their percentage isn't great, but they're knocking enough down to sort of make up that math problem. DeMar obviously is playing significantly better. He's, you know, adapting to defenses throwing extra attention at him very well. He's reading those situations much better than he has in the past. Kyle's like significantly fresher than he's ever been, and like I've always been of the mind that Kyle's playoff issues are more health related than like anything related to his skill or his psyche or anything like that. I just think he's been banged up in the playoffs, and the fact that he's playing 32 minutes a game, like, I think you're actually going to see the benefits of that come playoff time, and he's going to be that much more fresh and that much more able to be aggressive and sort of take games by the reins whenever he needs to, which he hasn't had to do much this season, which is very good because they're still 41-16 with him playing 32 minutes a game, and like they've been able to develop everyone else. And then Yeah, I just think it's a very different team. Their free throw rate, I think Matt Moore tweeted about this today, like they used to be, you know, perennially like top three or four. I think the lowest they've ever been in the last 5 years is like eighth in free throw rate. Now they're like 15th. Like they don't rely on that to score. And that was always a thing in the playoffs as well. It was like, oh, the Raptors are so dependent on getting foul calls that, you know, that's just not sustainable come playoff time when whistles tighten up and it becomes more physical game and sort of a different brand of basketball. Like they seem like they're a little bit more playoff proof in terms of just like how things change. And I think they're a little bit more adaptable. And I don't know. Are you buying into them at all as like an improved playoff team? Like I'd like to get people's opinions on this because it feels like people in Toronto, people who watch the team every day, are like, yeah, this feels entirely different. And yeah, there are still some question marks about DeMar and Kyle come playoff time, but like the process seems much more suited to being successful come playoff time, or at least a little harder to sort of stop and completely snuff out. Are you seeing that? Like, do you think this is going to be a more playoff ready team based on all the stuff you've seen through 50 some odd games this season?
I am. I think they're getting contributions from basically everyone that's playing. I think I think the 3-point shooting is just a big thing. And I look at how they're gonna play, and I think there are some breaking points of the Cavs now. I think just looking at who the Cavs are gonna play at the two, you know, are the Cavs are gonna feel great about, you know, about J.R. Smith and Rodney Hood being the ones defending DeMar DeRozan, right? Like, is that gonna go that well? I mean, J.R. has had some success against DeMar before, but this is. Would you say this is like the best DeMar we've seen? I mean, like that if he's at another level, that matters. And I think the Hill acquisition, I think, matters a lot for defending Lowry because he's so long. Because that's a guy that's been in the playoffs that's gonna at least make Kyle work on the other end of the floor. I think that matters. But I mean, I think I also do think it's just one of those things where it's so simple to say it, but I do think we just like need to see them. It would do me a lot of confidence in the Raptors, who right now are number one in the East, and I think, you know, have been the best team qualitatively in the East this year. I think it would help if whoever they get in the first round, it would really help if they just stomped that team in 4 or 5 games. Just go out there, look like a really good team in the playoffs in that way, and just kind of dominate. That would, I think, kind of that might be one of those things you have to have that proof when it matters, and maybe that's Philly and that's tough, or maybe it's someone a little bit worse. But if they did that to me would be like the way you ultimately sell it. It's just you actually go into the playoffs and you act like a number one seed that even if some of the games are close, you get through in 4 or 5 games.
Oh my God, I know, man. I want nothing more than a Game 1 win. I haven't seen a Game 1 win in a playoff series since I was 7 years old. This it needs to happen. And if it's the Heat or the Sixers or the Pistons or one of these kind of flawed teams at the bottom of the East, like I don't, that's the thing, is like normally when you go into a playoff series as a Raptors fan, you are like, all right, there are four teams that could potentially get this matchup, and you're overanalyzing every single one of them, and you talk yourself out of wanting to face every single one of them because everyone presents a different sort of challenge. This season, I'm just like, yeah, they'll play who they play, and I feel like they're going to beat them, and I feel like it'll be, you know, pretty convincing. You know, the Sixers are interesting because Joel Embiid is so damn good. But other than that, like, I'm just not scared of any of those teams in that range. And even the Sixers, I think they have crunch time issues. I think, the, you know, Ben Simmons' inability or just, like, total reluctance to ever take a shot outside of the paint. Like, that's going to end up being an issue as well that could kind of be exposed come playoff time. So, like, I'm not concerned about any of these teams, but I feel like I'm kind of in the minority because Raptors fans, like, I do think, you know, while I say I think people are more confident, there is still just every time the Raptors play one of these teams in the regular season and it's a close game. I think they had that game against the Heat last week where they were, you know, pretty convincingly up, and then they gave up a bad fourth quarter run, and then it was a close one possession game at the end. And people got all like, oh man, better avoid the Heat. And it's like, well, you got to play one of these teams, and you can't avoid them all. And I do feel like some people kind of overhype and sort of fearmonger a little bit, maybe too much, with some of these teams. But yeah, I totally agree that, honestly, it doesn't even need to be like a big first round win. Like, win a game one, and I feel like people's perceptions will instantly change. Like, that's pretty much all it is. I think a convincing game one win where you don't sort of come out flat at home, you don't wear the wrong color jersey, so the other team is matching the home color jersey, like the Nets series back in the day. And, like, you don't just, like, lay down and die at the hands. You don't become, like, the stepping stone to Giannis Antetokounmpo becoming a superstar. Like, just beat a team. And I agree. Like, I understand the sort of hesitation from people to be like, yeah, let's buy into the Raptors before seeing that happen. But I do think that it's much more likely that we will see it happen this season. So that's why I'm kind of, like, buying in a little bit ahead of time. But maybe that's just me being naive and stupid. I don't know. But I do think, you know, as it comes to the Cavs, it should be a closer, like, less, you know, total blowout of a series. I don't think we'll see LeBron yamming on the Raptors off backboard in the first minute and sort of drinking a beer on the sidelines and laughing. Like, I think it'll actually be a series that requires LeBron's full attention. I don't know. How do you sort of handicap that series right now? If they were to play Raptors-Cavs right now, or say 2 weeks from now, a month from now, you know, obviously assuming Kevin Love is back, 100 times they play this series, how many times do you think each team wins?
You know, it's an interesting question because I've been thinking about this, and I don't – part of my gut – my brain tells me it's somewhat intellectually dishonest to just assume the Cavs are fine right now.
Right.
And I don't know – I have, like, this weird thing because I've always, as a member of Cavs Twitter and a guy that has watched LeBron my whole life, I find it silly to doubt things that he's going to do.
Yeah.
Like, that just typically, unless he's playing the Warriors or, like, the first finals with the Heat happens, or he's, like, his freaking teammates are Sasha Pavlovich and the Magic, like, have guys on steroids. You don't bet against LeBron, right? It's just, like, it takes a lot to actually stop him. And it's usually at the big moment, like, the absolute maximum of where he's taking his team anyway, right? Like,
as someone who has witnessed the full force of playoff LeBron a couple times now, I also am in that camp as well.
But at the same time, like, if you looked at the Cavs this year, and yes, they're, like, you can, I know, this, it functionally is like a roster reset in a lot of ways, despite a lot of some guys being there, but it's very new pieces now with six guys coming out, four guys coming in. I think it's a little bit intellectually dishonest to just say, at least a little bit intellectually dishonest, you just say this team is now fine, they're going to run through the East and there's going to be no issues. I think you can feel that way, but I don't think there are data points that however you're going to track this, I don't think that's there yet. I think they probably get there, but I think they benefit, especially, and this is sort of why Kevin Love's return matters so much. Mm-hmm. I think this team needs time to gel together, to play together. They have time now. I think they probably would have benefited. They'd be the one team that maybe probably didn't really benefit from the All-Star break happening when it did. Right. They probably could have used 2-3 more games to practice. They in some of the quotes I saw coming out of their practice on Wednesday, that they indicated that they're kind of going back to the basics as guys were away doing their own thing, and that's what you do in All-Star break. That totally makes sense. I think we're gonna know somewhat when we get to the playoffs and the first couple rounds, but it's hard for me to handicap right now because we just don't really know what this Cavs team is yet, and it's unfair to label them in any real way. I think if I was going to trust my gut, I think in my mind, it's if I was going to rank who I would say was most likely to come out of the East, it'd go in this order in only three teams: Cleveland, then Toronto, and then Boston. And I think that was my hierarchy, with Toronto very much right now pushing on with the Cavs because they've just been the best team in the East this year and have that balance and are playing new. And I Boston again has struggled a little, but they're probably going to go back to being better than they have been recently, just because you would expect they would. But I think the Cavs have a chance to reassert themselves, even if they end up as the 3 seed, which seems very possible and maybe likely. I think that they have a chance to reassert themselves. Where do you fall on where these two teams ultimately break down, and how the top of the East sort of looks to you right now?
Yeah, I think the LeBron thing is always going to be the trump card until it's not. So I would still put the Cavs ahead of the Raptors, but I don't think, like I've kind of alluded to, I don't think it's quite the gap that it used to be. And I think, you know, whereas in the past, like, the Cavs were kind of alone at the top and there was a big gap, then it was like Raptors, Wizards, Celtics, whoever. I feel like it's more close to something like Cavs at the top, Raptors like just behind, then maybe a bit more of a gap, and then like Celtics, Wizards, Bucks, I think probably. I don't think the Celtics are going to be a very good playoff team. I think their offense is too
too far gone at this point to really think it's going to be something they can salvage in time for the playoffs. And I think it's going to be kind of their death in the playoffs is just not an ability to score, because, you know, the whole offense beats defense thing, I think that very much holds true, especially against very good offenses. And, like, I wouldn't be shocked if the Celtics got, like, a big scare in the first round from some team, which, like, could also happen for the Raptors and Cavs as well, because the East is a little deeper and it's a little better. Like, that Cavs-Bucks series that's sitting there right now is the potential 3-6. Like, I wouldn't want that to be the series if I'm a Cavs fan. Like, I don't think the Cavs lose that series, but I wouldn't want that to happen. I don't think the gap is high enough right now where I'd just be super confident. Like, yeah, the Cavs are going to steamroll through this like they do in the first round every year. I think they'd at least get a scare.
And they could get Philly. Like, if you look at the standings right now, it's Toronto would get Miami, which I think they would feel very good about. And it seems like Detroit maybe gets up there, but they're sort of a game and a half out with not a lot of time left.
Yeah.
Boston gets Philly, which, you know, they probably win that series, but that's not an easy series for them by any means.
Yeah.
Cleveland gets Boston or Milwaukee, like you said, and that's tough. And, you know, Washington and the Pacers is 100%. Wizards Pacers would 1,000% be an NBA TV.
Oh, like, my God.
1,000%.
Wizards Pacers might bump the Raptors from 12:30 on the first Saturday. Like, that would be
such a win. Just shouts to the Pacers and the Wizards, but, like, you're 100% like playing in the game at the times where, like, no one besides us junkies are watching. But
yeah.
I think one of the beauties of the East this year in looking at it is I think you could be right about Boston. I have my doubts about them as well. Although I think very highly of Kyrie, but I think there's limitations on what they're kind of getting out of guys. They basically really missed Gordon Hayward, shockingly, because he's their best player.
Stunner.
Shocker. Gordon Hayward not playing all year really hurts them. But if you look at the East, whoever these teams – I think one of the things I feel confident in saying is maybe more so than last year and maybe so the year before as well, when the Cavs have, you know, like, faced like a Piston team that wasn't really that good but played really hard. I think the Cavs in Toronto and Boston are probably all getting teams – that are at least going to make them uncomfortable. Like, the Cavs play the Bucks. Dealing with Giannis is not going to be great.
And it sucks. Let me tell you, it sucks a lot.
Last year, like, the Wizards.
It's truly terrifying.
Yeah, like, he's insane. You know, like, whoever has to deal with Joel Embiid in the first round and Ben Simmons in the first round in that team, like, that's hard. I think all these teams could get some rub, and maybe that'll tell us something. And because honestly, like, you know, it's some of this, especially with the Cavs, just like, and I've said this about Toronto in this podcast as well, but some of it just feels like we need to get there and then just kind of see where it lays. And I don't know if I don't think we should think of either of these teams necessarily as, you know, finals favorites. I don't know if you're going to rank the teams most likely to win a title, but where they would fall on your personal list. But I'm pretty sure I'm picking whoever comes out of the West to win, especially if it's Houston or Golden State, and we assume it's Golden State.
Yeah, I don't – like, everyone's playing for second, I think. I think the Warriors are going to steamroll anybody. I don't think what the Cavs did is going to be nearly enough to contend with the Warriors, although I guess the pieces fit a little bit better for that series now than they did 2 weeks ago. But, no, I think it's for second, and, you know, honestly – I feel like the finals thing for the Raptors means a lot more than it does to Cavs fans. So, like, that's why my rooting interest. Like, I hope to see that, even as, like, a neutral NBA fan. I feel like that'd be a cool thing to see, although everyone hates the Raptors. Like, I think that would be kind of a fun story if they were the team to unseat LeBron. I'm biased, of course, but and it's weird that I can talk about it and think it's, like, at least a remote possibility. Like, I didn't have any illusions the last couple seasons. Like, it was... Even that six-game series, it never really felt close. Those two games at home were fantastic. I was at those. It was unbelievable. And it was just, like, an amazing moment for the Raptors and the franchise. And it was just, like, yeah, they're here. There was one game there where it really felt like they were kind of on the level of the Cavs. It was that game four late in the game. The Cavs had scored, like, 12 straight possessions, and the Raptors kept scoring also. And I was like, yeah, this is the one part of this series where it's like, yeah, these two teams are equals. Other than that, it was a complete blowout, and I think even the Raptors kind of knew. There's a, I think it was Luis Scola talking to Bruce Arthur. I think he talked about this on Zach Lowe's podcast about how, you know, before Game 6 in Toronto, he told Bruce, like, yeah, this is going to be hard. This is not going to go well. They kind of knew it was over at that point. I don't think that's going to be the sort of tone of the series. I think it'll be a lot more. I think the Cavs will have to take the Raptors more seriously, and I feel like the respect level from LeBron, as much as it hasn't been there the last two seasons, will kind of have to be there. Otherwise, maybe he could get bitten. I just wanted to circle back just sort of to the new guys in the Cavs. Who do you think is the most important guy that they got at the deadline?
I think it's George Hill.
Yeah.
I think a guy that
I hate playing in the playoffs.
I did not remember how long, having just openly going to admit that I didn't watch a lot of Kings basketball this year. just going to say that. I don't know if, like, I keep track of, I'll just say this, I keep track of how many times I watch teams other than the Cavs, just so I, like, make sure I'm splitting it up evenly and kind of know what I've done. The Raptors have been bottom three amongst teams I've watched all year. Just no reason for me to watch the Kings.
The Kings or the Raptors?
I didn't mean to say the Raptors, the Kings. Okay. The Raptors are fairly happy. The Kings, just no reason to watch the Kings.
No, they're trash. They're not fun.
Yeah, and I just would like to see, like, all I needed to know was that tweet George Hill sent out about all the angry emojis, and then he, like, tweeted about his friend's rap video, and I was like, okay, like, this is clearly not going well. Side note, I'm very excited to see how Mon Shumpert handles Sacramento. Like, I'm fascinated by Shumpert NorCal. I hope he just, like, watches Lady Bird and tries to live his best life that way. But I think it's Hill because he's the opposite of Isaiah Thomas, right? Like, he's not going to come in and, like, I don't think he's going to say anything that's just going to be weird. I can't imagine he's going to, be part of a gang up on Kevin Love and accuse him of being sick. Like, I'd be surprised if that happened. He's very long. He's not short. He doesn't have a bad hip. Like, the toe injury is something I think we need to see how, like, there's been some rumblings about what that toe is like. But I think it's him. And I think from there, I think if we're looking at the second one, and I'm maybe overstating the excitement of it, because I think the buy-in in the Cleveland market on him is going to be huge. But I think Nance could be number two. I think there's a chance. Like, I think Clarkson's been kind of the one that's maybe outperformed expectations so far, but I think there's a chance it goes in order. I think my personal order would be Hill, who's clearly number one, the short-term impact, then Nance, then Hood, then Clarkson coming in last. I don't know, how do you, as someone who has just seen them play twice and objectively knows these other guys to some degree, how do you think they actually change what the Cavs have been in? And do the Cavs need to, like, mess with the formula of what they've done? Or is there, like, a version of this that maybe makes them more dangerous in some way?
Yeah, I think you had kind of have it spot on in terms of, like, the ranking of how important they are. Like, I think George Hill is such a perfect point guard to play with LeBron. Obviously, it didn't work with Isaiah. It worked with Kyrie to have sort of a ball-dominant point guard because he was so damn good, and it gave a nice release valve to LeBron. It didn't work with Isaiah just because he was so inefficient, and it just didn't work. Maybe it would have come to work in time, but I don't know. I have always kind of had my issues with Isaiah Thomas as anything but just, like, the best offensive player on a team. Like, I think that's kind of his lot in life, and whether or not the team is good, who knows. But I don't think he can really play off ball and be that effective and be a secondary guy and really have any, you know, too much utility. So I think George Hill is just, like, a perfect dude to have there. He's also probably, like, their best defensive player now, too, which is not an unimportant thing for a team that's been playing Isaiah Thomas, Jose Calderon, and Derrick Rose at point guard all season. Like, I think that matters. And in the playoffs, especially against the Raptors, we've seen George Hill lock up Kyle Lowry in the past and give him a whole lot of problems in that Pacers series a few years ago. So I think both in terms of just, like, the matchups that they're likely to come across in the playoffs and just in terms of just, like, the fit on the team, I agree that Hill's probably number one. And Nance, like, I've never been, like, a huge Nance guy. Maybe I just don't watch the Lakers enough. I don't know. But, like, I think he kind of fits. He almost seems just like a less broken Tristan Thompson, which, you know, a non-broken Tristan Thompson makes the Cavs very dangerous and very good defensively. And if Larry Nance can kind of be some sort of, you know, comparable style player, maybe not quite as talented as peak Tristan Thompson, but, like, maybe he is. I don't know. I think that is just, like, a big boost to a team that has really had no bigs all season long, and just to have a warm body there who's a little springier and a bit more youthful exuberance than Tristan Thompson, I think that's going to be really useful. Hood scares me just because shooters around LeBron are terrifying, and that's certainly going to be a thing. And that's, like, he's going to have a game where he goes off for 25 and hits 8 threes in a game. Like, that's just going to happen because because that's what happens when LeBron is sort of dictating the offense and you have a shooter around him as good as Hood is. And, you know, Clarkson, whatever, I've not really been high on Clarkson. And, yeah, he's been good the first couple games with the Cavs, but I don't think that'll last. Maybe this is a situation where he comes to a new team and is just a different and better player and sort of reawakened and, you know, there's new life breathed into him. But I don't think he's all that important, and I wouldn't be shocked if he kind of fell out of the rotation when things shorten up the playoffs if you're just looking at the guys in their roster and who you're going to want to have on the floor. Because I don't think you're going to play like Jordan Clarkson over Kyle Korver just in terms of, you know, how the Cavs tend to work. You know, Clarkson almost seems like an Isaiah replacement in that he's really good when he's sort of, you know, dictating the offense and has the ball in his hands a bunch, but you don't need that when LeBron's on your team. So I'm not sure how useful he'll be when things really start to matter. But yeah, I think just not having bad defensive players everywhere is where this is going to help the Cavs significantly, and where I have some pause, because you know, if the Cavs were going to be the 29th or 30th ranked defense all season with a, you know, kind of sputtering top 10-ish offense that hasn't been very good lately, like, that's a team I think you can beat in the playoffs. And I think as good as LeBron is, there's only so much, you know, data that he can overcome by just being himself. Like, there's just some parts of the team that are just so qualitatively and quantitatively bad that you can't overcome that. And I thought with that sort of profile they had before, I thought maybe that could be sort of a formula for upsetting them. And now if they're going to be like somewhere between like 15 and 20 on defense and kind of regain some of that offensive magic they had early in the season, then yeah, I think that's definitely a problem for the Raptors. And I think that becomes a lot harder for any team that's not named the Warriors to sort of solve. And I think the versatility they have, they can go big. They can play Tristan or Nance with Kevin Love. They can keep playing Love at the five and go LeBron at the four with a bunch of shooters. They can, you know, imagine a lot up with like Hill, Hood, Korver, LeBron, and Love. Like, that's terrifying. That's just so much shooting and so much space. Maybe it's not the best defensive lineup in the world, but also you have Hood and Hill out there who can kind of reasonably play defense at the very least, or in Hill's case, potentially be a shutdown guy. So maybe you kind of balance out the 195 offensive rating that lineup would put up with, you know, a reasonable defensive rating as well. So yeah, I just think there are a lot of different looks they can go to now, and just having warm bodies who aren't just decaying corpses of old players with large egos, or Tristan Thompson, like, I think that is really just going to be useful, because LeBron with warm bodies is a better formula than most teams can actually throw out there.
I haven't thought about this much yet, but I wonder how similar this Cavs team ends up being to like the team that lost Kyrie and Kevin Love in the first season and like was playing Delly and
it was like
LeBron and Patrick. He dragged them in that, and I wonder if the talent's better, I wonder if he believes that he can drag them even more.
It feels like a better version of that, right? I kind of see that.
Yeah, I mean George Hill's like Delly but good, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Nance is, Nance is. You know, like, I think this team is missing certain things. Like, I think they could use like a legitimate rim protector to some degree. But yeah, you know, like, I think you're good. You, if you're picking Nance or like a Tristan rim protector or DeAndre, like I think this gives them a better chance than giving up more stuff to get DeAndre Jordan. Like, I think in this reality is kind of much better for them.
Yeah.
Here's my question about Toronto the rest of the way. Is there anything you need to see from them to kind of what, like, or to see them iron out, or their issues they need to iron out before the end of the regular season, before they gear up for this playoff run? And, you know, and as a side to that, do they need to get the number one seed? Like, is for them getting the number one seed something that would matter to some degree? Because for the Cavs, I think as long as they're top three, I think they're fine, and I think they're probably going to settle the three. That's kind of where my guess is, unless they just go on a crazy run. But does Toronto need the number one seed to some degree?
Yeah, I think I think coming into the season they would have said no. Like, they're just going to try to develop their young guys, rest Lowry and stuff, and just sort of see what happens. And what's happened is that they're really goddamn good when they're resting Kyle Lowry and they're getting these young guys lots of run. So the fact that they can kind of have their cake and eat it too by getting the rest for the guys that they want to rest while also winning, you know, three out of every four games, I think they are totally happy with that. And I think at this point, considering how much they've kind of kept in the tank for their stars, I mean, Lowry and Ibaka and DeRozan had like a stretch just before the All-Star break where they didn't play a fourth quarter for like five or six games. Like, that's all going to matter. And if they really need to sort of go for that extra boost to try to get the one seed, I think they're actually going to do it now because there is a real incentive to do it. It's not just getting home court, which I think, obviously, you know, we've seen how bad the Raptors have been playing Cleveland in Cleveland and how competitive they've been at home against the Cavs over the last couple of seasons. Like, I think that matters, and I think they'd be very happy to get the one seed over anybody because they are damn good at home. They're 24-4 at home this season. Who knows how much that matters, but they're very good at home. They always have been. Everyone knows how crazy the Raptors crowd is. Like, that's a place you want to play four games in a playoff series as opposed to three. And also just, like, avoiding both the Celtics and Cavs, I think that is a pretty nice way to go about it. I mean, not having to play one of them to get to the second to the next one in the conference finals, like, that's just an easier path. And like, if you like going deep in the playoffs, like, I feel like it's all ultimately going to come down to whether or not they fall to two and play the Cavs in the second round or make it to a conference finals and play the Cavs. Like, I'm not sure how far they get ultimately matters in terms of evaluating the season. I think it's always going to come down to the Cavs regardless of when they play them. But I still think for the fans and just for like the enjoyment sake of it, like, going deep in the playoffs is really good. And there's extra clout that comes with that being a Final Four team as opposed to a Final Eight team. So there's a lot of reasons for them to go for the one seed. And if they can do it without putting everyone at risk of injury by playing them 40 minutes a game, then why the hell not do it? When, you know, Fred VanVleet can give you 25 minutes a game and you can blow teams out with your bench, like, that just seems like a reasonable thing to go after. And with the way the Celtics are sputtering, maybe that becomes, you know, locked up a lot earlier than we're thinking. It's a two-game split right now. The Raptors have a pretty easy schedule. I know the Celtics still have some road trips left. The Raptors don't leave the Eastern time zone for the rest of the season. They got all their Western trips out of the way pretty early, so it's kind of set up here for them to go on a run here and to continue on with the really good stretch they had before the All-Star break, and I don't really see that going away anywhere. And then in terms of stuff they got to work on, honestly, it's been kind of a holding pattern for a while because it's like, all right, this is all going to come down to the playoffs anyway. But if there is one thing, and this obviously is directly tied into how effective they'll be in the playoffs, it's the crunch time offense, and it's not been very good. There's been a lot made of it. They're I think like a minus 14 net rating in clutch situations this season, and that's not very good. And some of the best teams they've come across, I mean, the Warriors, the Celtics, like, they've had crunch time games against these teams and have kind of wilted in crunch time with their offense kind of reverting back to old habits. I am less concerned about like the ISO ball late in games than I think most people are, just because that's what every team does, and that's just what, you know, it's a low risk, you know, get the ball in your best player's hands sort of strategy, which I think most teams kind of employ in close game situations. And the sample is not very large. It's like 85 or 86 minutes over the course of the whole season that the Raptors have had as a clutch situation so far. They're not the Celtics playing, you know, 5-point games against the Magic every time out. Like, they're blowing teams out, so they're not getting a ton of practice or reps in those situations, and they still haven't really established what their crunch time lineup is going to be. And maybe it's just fluid, maybe it's different against every team, but I feel like if there's one thing they have to sort of work on, it's like, it's finding a lineup that you trust in those situations, and then also kind of coming up with at least a few sets where you can kind of be more creative with the offense and be less predictable and telegraph DeMar DeRozan, you know, coming around a screen to try to find his own shot a little bit less. And I kind of believe, and I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, because everything Dwayne Casey's done this season has been a vast improvement and has kind of blown my expectations way out of the water. And so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt over the final 25 games that he's going to be able to figure it out. You know, maybe he doesn't, but I think he's earned the right to sort of, and earned the sort of leash from Raptors fans to expect that he's going to figure something out. And, you know, the All-Star game, he drew up a nice play at the end for LeBron and Kyrie and whoever else was involved in that play. Maybe that's the start of something nice with him. But yeah, if there's one thing, like, the first 46 minutes of games has been pretty much flawless, and it's been so consistent every night. The Raptors are just blowing teams out. They get to the fourth quarter, and, like, very rarely do you feel that much stress. And maybe it's the matter of just, like, letting bad teams back into games, Celtics style a little bit, just to get some reps late in games, because really they haven't been able to get them that much. But if there is something, it's those last 2 minutes of games that I'd really like to see them kind of iron out. And, you know, that could really derail them come playoff time, sure, if they still have the same problems. But again, I think they will get there, and like they've been good enough all season in every other facet that I'm going to give them some patience in that regard. So I think it'll come around at some point.
Yeah, 100%. I would expect it. Well, and just DeMar and Kyle, I mean, this is I mean, this could. I mean, I don't. It's hard to know this in the moment, but there's a chance this is their best shot, right? Like there's a chance that this is the best this group could ever be. I mean, the young guys should keep getting better, but you know, there's a chance in theory that this is could be the peak or one of the few peak seasons for both of these guys, or at least DeMar, I think, has just been awesome.
The nice thing about this season, sorry to cut you off, but the nice thing about it is that they've kind of set themselves up with a window here. And like, yes, they have to pay a couple guys. Like, Fred VanVleet could walk this summer, get a big offer sheet from somewhere, and they won't be able to match it. But, like, most of these young guys are still in their rookie deals. They have Serge, Kyle, and DeMar locked in for two seasons beyond this at least. And, like, next season, theoretically, especially if LeBron ends up leaving, like, that could be their peak window. And, yes, Hayward comes back and the Celtics become more dangerous because those young guys are better as well. But, like, think about how good DeLon and Fred and Jakob and Pascal are right now, and think about it a year from now and just how much better those guys are going to be, and also still very cheap and cost control for the next couple of seasons. Like, this doesn't have to be an all-in year for the Raptors, and it's nice that they are, like, I think they're ahead of the curve a little bit in terms of this sort of reset window that Masai set up over the summer. Like, I don't think they were expecting to be this good this year. I thought this was going to be sort of more of a transition year, with 2018-19 being the season where they really go for it and maybe make some trades to try to bring in veterans or whatever. The fact that they've already gotten to this point and they're already going to probably break their regular season wins record this season with so many young guys on the team and losing so many guys over last offseason, like, I think that's, everything is going to be gravy at some point. Maybe it's not just yet, but it does feel like it's headed towards that track where even if they lose in the second round of the Cavs, it doesn't require them to blow things up. It's like, okay, we saw it, we're going to be better next year, we have the same dudes in-house, and let's sort of run it back again. And maybe people will get tired of that, but I sure like watching 50-plus win basketball. It's really good.
Better watching good basketball is a much better use of everybody's time. Like, yeah. 100%. We're all better off in watching basketball and, like, good teams. Like, I always feel for teams that, like, among all the drama of covering this Cavs team, I think there is, it's just kind of nice to actually watch stuff that can get really competent when it really matters, despite all the insanity around it. Mike, so let's wrap it up on this last question.
Yeah.
The Celtics are sort of like the kind of last team in all of this. We've hit on them a little bit, but if you're looking at I kind of gave my rankings, but where would they fall in your, let's say these teams are most likely to get out of the East. How do you stack them up? Like, is it, and is Boston in your mind, like, have a, like a, is it really, is it just Cavs or Raptors, or is Boston a legitimate third party in all of this?
I think it's, I don't think they're like a 0% chance. I think if I was to handicap it, I would say like Cavs 50%, Raptors 30, Celtics like 15, and then throw everyone else in the remaining five, whether it's the Wizards or the Bucks or the Sixers if they get hot or something like that. But yeah, I think the Celtics have a case because their defense is so good, and Kyrie himself is just like a very good playoff player and a very good player to have in a playoff series, and in a lot of these series will be the best player on the floor. You know, that's a nice thing to have if you're the Celtics, and you can kind of, maybe you get hot, you know, Marcus Smart hits 7 threes in a game or whatever again, or Jason Tatum recovers his early season form. Like, there's a formula there. I just don't know if it's super sustainable. I don't think they're very deep. I think their bench is bad, and maybe that becomes less of an issue when you get to the playoffs and you're playing 7 or 8 guys, but I don't know. I feel like they kind of burned themselves out early in the season, to be honest, because they were playing so damn hard during that win streak and just over the course of the first half of the year when they were rattling off all these wins. And when you're not a deep team, like, I feel like that's going to catch up to you at some point. And, you know, again, their offense is so just sort of unimaginative and not very good or effective that I'm not super scared of it in a playoff series. And, like, I wouldn't be shocked, again, like, if I'm to handicap these top three teams as to who's most likely to get upset in the first round, as a Raptors fan, it feels weird to say that it's not the Raptors, but I do think it's the Celtics. I think that, like, they could get sort of clipped by some team if they get the wrong matchup, or, like, they get Giannis, for example, and Giannis goes nuts. Like, I could see that happening for sure. So, they remind me a lot of that 2014-15 Raptors team. Maybe they're a little bit more talented, but, like, the Raptors started off so well that year. They were 24-7. They lost DeMar DeRozan for like 21 games, and that injury kind of led to a domino effect where Kyle got burnt out and the whole team kind of lost its mojo when Kyle stopped being so effective. And then they just obviously got swept and shit kicked by the Wizards in the playoffs. But I think, maybe they're a little bit better than that. Maybe they're less likely to have a really sort of disappointing playoff run. But no, I don't think they're quite what the Raptors or Cavs. I still think they're good. I still think they're dangerous. They're not a team that's going to get swept or anything in a series against like the Raptors or Cavs. But I don't feel confident. If it finishes this way, 1-2-3, I feel pretty confident the Raptors and Celtics are not playing in the playoffs. Let's put it that way.
I think that's fair. I think Boston has to kind of their offense has just not looked great of late. Is your reason to have the Cavs at sort of as your favorite there? Is it just LeBron? Like, it's just what LeBron will likely do just ends up being unmanageable for a team that like Toronto's played this well.
Yeah, like I'm not betting against LeBron until it's a year late, to be honest. Like he's too damn good. I have too much respect for what he does in the playoffs. We always forget what playoff LeBron is like. And for LeBron now to not be angry all the time and actually have players he seems happy playing with, that seems like a good thing for the Cavs. He almost feels insurmountable sometimes. And like, eventually he's not going to be. And at some point, this run of making the finals every year is going to stop. And maybe it's this season. But again, I'm not going to bet on that happening until a year after it happens because I can't envision it happening just the way things have gone the last 7 years. Maybe I'm just so like accustomed to him making the finals in a breeze. I can't envision it happening. So for now, I'll hold back from my like, yeah, Raptors, baby, is there 80% chance to make the finals? Like I'll hold back from that biased opinion right now. Because LeBron has hurt me too many times in the past to think anything else.
I think that's sort of as good of a place to leave it as any. I think that's how I end up feeling too. I think we need to see Toronto do it, and I kind of hope that's what we get.
In this relationship between the Raptors and Cavaliers, the Raptors are the U.S. women's hockey team, and the Cavs are the insurmountable, unbelievable Canadian hockey team. The Canadian women's hockey team that is about to stomp the United States hockey team all over the floor in the gold medal game in about an hour's time from the time of recording. Just had to throw that in there, by the way. Well, I don't know, Sean, if you care about hockey, but...
Sean, I wasn't going to do this to you because we're both Tottenham fans, but you know, and right now, I just feel like the Raptors are going to pull an Arsenal, and like, you know, Lowry's going to be hit the Lacazette from the Derby a couple weeks ago and just blow it.
That's also probably true, considering history. So I'll take my team Canada gold medal and the Raptors losing. That's fine. I can deal with that. This is what it's been my entire life. I can't remember a day in which Team Canada lost to the United States. And I mean, I think they almost lost in 2014, but I don't know. If I recall, Team USA completely choked it away late.
Look, I'm not disputing it. And in the Winter Olympics, I'm half rooting for my Norwegian bloodline anyway, because the Norwegians are just fantastic at skiing and just like have great healthcare, just rack up medals. That's like that's what they do. They're incredible at like just a few things, and it happens to be those two.
Chris, from your picture, I never would have thought that you have Scandinavian blood. Never, ever, ever.
The blonde hair, and blue eyes, just you know, totally should be like. Everyone thinks I'm like a Eastern European of Eastern European descent, not straight out of Oslo. The Americans have not won a gold medal in women's hockey since the inaugural, I believe. I think Canada's won everyone since, if I'm not mistaken. And look, like that's fine. Canada can take that. That's good. America deserves. America needs to take some L's sometimes. Like that's we deserve it.
I mean, it's been one big L for the last little while, I think. But
look, the real problem will be when like RJ Barrett, Andrew Wiggins, and Tristan Thompson like shock the world and beat Team USA best. Like that's when we need to panic a little bit. Like I don't know when that is. Because they're all really young, and maybe Anthony Bennett will just like have like a crazy international performance and like redeem himself in some way. Like that's kind of my dream. But until that happens, I think like America's good. Like if America loses to Canada in basketball in that way, and let's say the Raptors make the finals this year, and like these things happen within a 5-year span or something, like then I think we have to start talking to, you know, like there might be the declaration of war incoming, because like that's just the problem. I think if America, it's a big bruise to the ego.
You can just move here if you want. It's all right. We do have Justin Rowan, but other than that, it's pretty good.
Yeah, you know what? Like I would just really never need to go to Winnipeg.
No, you know, that's not Canada. sort of halfway related.
Winnipeg is not Canada. Sean Woodley, February 21st as we record this. just on the record, not a fan of Winnipeg.
No, it's, I mean, there are people in Winnipeg I like John Godis from Raptors HQ. He's a good dude. I like John. Justin, though, just like ruining the entire reputation of the Peg.
Look, ruined through the sword. Don't know why I keep him on. you know, just bringing down our reputation.
He just happened for the Twitter followers, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, which, you know what, we gotta make sure he didn't pay for those. Gotta make sure. I'm gonna check audio, Justin. But, you know, just one of the Cavs fans out there that are listening to this that aren't following a lot of members of Raptors Twitter, John is one of them, the whole Raptors HQ, even Harsh Dave when he's tweeting about gross Chelsea and Kyle Lowry's peach. Raptors Twitter's great. Engage with them. And they're friendlier Eastern Conference Twitter base to engage with if you're gonna partake.
Yeah,
now in the finals.
We're too beaten down and sad to be arrogant. So, come on down and laugh at our misfortune. This was fun, dude. This went a lot longer than I thought it would, but this was fun.
Yeah, me too. Everyone now gets basketball back, so you will not have to hear, you'll probably still hear us ramble, but, you know, not be making jokes about hockey and Lacazette in Norway. But you can find me on Twitter at CDBM, right? To find the pod on Locked On Cavs pod on Twitter at Locked On Cavs.
Yeah, I'm at Woodley Sean. You can find the show at Locked On Raptors, iTunes, ratings, reviews, all that good stuff. 5 stars, please. It helps our egos so much. It's wonderful for you to do. If you are in the Hamilton, Ontario area or Toronto, Saturday, women's basketball, McMaster University. I'm doing the PA for that game. They're in the playoffs. It's the quarterfinals. It'll be a good time. Come on down. Support a good local basketball team, and hope to see you there. If not, thanks for not coming, you assholes. I didn't need you to come anyway. And
Canadians swore. That is like the peak of the apocalypse.
Oh boy, if swears on the podcast are the peak of the apocalypse, we have been dead for a long time.
Look, we've been there for a while, but
yeah.
When are the Raptors back in action? When are the Raptors, like, if people want to tune in and watch the Raptors?
They play the Bucks on Friday in what should be a very fun game.
Look, so this is my advice. Watch the Cavs play the Wizards on Thursday.
Yeah.
TiVo Cavs Grizzlies, okay? And watch Raptors Bucks, and then watch Cavs Grizzlies, like, Sunday or something like that.
What is TiVo? That's what I would do. Isn't that like an old thing? Isn't that old?
Well,
like, they don't have it anymore?
You know, I just use it as a verb. I'm, you know, maybe that just means I'm like a 90-year-old man trapped in a body, but it's like DVR. And for the non-core code, or if you have Sling and you have like, or YouTube TV and you have the cloud recording, do that.
Yeah, in Canada we call it a PVR.
What is that?
Personal video recorder, I guess.
See, I don't even know what
DVR is digital video recorder.
Yeah.
But
yeah. PVR is better, even though I hadn't heard that before. I think I like that better.
Yeah, so I'm just going to PVR the Cavs and Grizzlies game, which sounds miserable, really, that game.
It's super sad. Like,
you should watch
Bucks
Raptors. You should watch Giannis probably lead to some tears. It'll be good. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be good. Basketball is back. We're the whole Locked On Network. And also, check out Locked On NBA. Monday through Friday now. A lot of the great hosts of the network are contributing to that, including two of my favorites, Wes Goldberg and David Ermil, I believe on Tuesdays are doing their show. So check that out. Follow us. 5 stars. Make us happy as podcasters. And Sean, you want to take us out?
Yeah. Thanks so much for tuning in. Again, ratings, reviews, all that good stuff. And until next time, thank you for listening to Locked On Cavters?